On episode 219 of the Tennis Files podcast, you'll learn about tennis-specific movement training and recovery with Dean Hollingworth.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Welcome back to another episode of the Tennis Files Podcast. This is Mehrban Iranshad, your host. And today we have part two of my interview with Coach Dean Hollingworth. If you listened to last week's episode, then you'll know that Dean has well over 25 years of experience as a strength and conditioning coach, and he is a certified strength and conditioning specialist, a master tennis performance specialist by the ITPA, that's the International Tennis Performance Association, and he's part of Team PTR. He also has an online class that he hosts, online tennis specific fitness training classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 12 o'clock Eastern, which you can access from anywhere in the world over the amazing internet. So definitely check that out by messaging Dean or contacting him on his website. And for this episode, for part two, we narrow down on three more big mistakes that tennis players make in their tennis fitness training. So I will not spoil them, but I will let you listen in on our interview to discover them. But first, my pun of the day. And you'll have to promise not to turn off this episode once you hear it. All right, here it goes. A lemon was playing a USTA match against an orange. After arguing over a few close calls, both the lemon and the orange agreed to find a neutral third party to call the balls in and out. Good thing there was a lime judge nearby. A lime judge? Got the lemon, the orange, and then the lime neutral party. You know, they say if you have to explain your joke, then it's not a good one, but I don't know. I just explained it just in case. You probably got it. I know you're a smart person listening to a podcast such as this. So, hope you enjoyed that one. And with that, we will kick it off to my interview with Dean. So a lot of great stuff in this one. So I hope that you make some notes on a piece of paper or at least in your brain if you're listening to it on the road or in the shower or wherever else. So without further ado, here is part two of my interview with Coach Dean Hollingworth. So let us go to number three.
Okay. So this is, you know, I did a whole movement thing for the Tennis Files. I think it was 2 years ago. And I really enjoy working on court or on a soccer field or in an open area working on movement. And one of the things that has really gotten to me over the last few years is some of the stuff that people are putting out for movement that has nothing to do with anything. You know, I watch the people put out cones and ladders and hurdles and just, it's like they're just throwing it out there, and where it lands, like, okay, we'll do this and we'll run over there, we'll do that. Now, if you're dealing with junior athletes, like really young little kids, fantastic. You know, you really want to be able to develop all their different type of motor skills. So you really want to challenge them. But when I start seeing high level players, perform various drills that I cannot understand. And I'm at the point sometimes I think, okay, well, maybe you're just a little too jaded. So, you know, I'll call friends, that colleagues of mine, and say, hey, did you see that? And they're like, oh my God, why are they doing this? So I think the way we train a tennis athlete has to be pretty, reflective of the sport. You know, like I definitely got to show some videos here. So, and I will describe the videos for some of you know, for the people that are just listening. So we're going to go to this video here. This, I call this bad cones. Is this bad cones? Bad or cones. Bad hurdles?
It's usually when I get ice cream, I get bad cones, but this is different.
Yeah, it's taking its time loading here for some reason. So can you see that, Mariban?
Yeah, if you just expand it.
No, I'm going to, yeah. So I'm just going to run it through. So I'm just going to let it run through and, you know, just watch the movement patterns here. You don't move like that. You don't move like that on a tennis court. Like I'm just,
that's pretty cool.
I'm glad you like it, but you know, like, first of all, watch her split step here. She lands on both feet and then she takes off. And this cross, that's not a crossover. That's a gallop.
That's crazy.
You know, and then here we watch this change of direction. Now that's her change of direction. That can be much more efficient. Like again, you know, and we just play through. This is beautiful. This is what I love. Right,
she's
here.
Jumping over the cone here.
Yeah, this wow. is yeah, and going, and then another jump with another slot. Mm-hmm. You know what? And then the last one here. Look at this.
Wow.
No one does this on a tennis court. So I'm losing my mind and getting you know, flustered with this. But that's the point. That's truly the point, is that we want this to be really exercises that are beneficial to the athlete, that are going to develop good motor patterns. And I don't think people understand. Well, you know, maybe she's not lifting her feet enough, or maybe she's doing this. Stop it. Okay. That's not the case at all. If you are teaching a motor sequence to an athlete, regardless if they do it well or not, they're learning something, and people have to understand this. So the coaches, you know, this coach that's encouraging this movement is teaching this young player bad motor patterns. And that's the bottom line. And anything you do is a possible teaching event. So performing that drill over and over again, you know, it's not. It might get you a lot of likes on Instagram because, oh wow, you know, she's jumping around, bounding, and all that. But it's not the way to go. It's just not. And I'd like to share again, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Thank you. Good.
So basically, she is going to, you know, if she repeats those movements enough times, she might end up, like, you know, jumping around and galloping like that. And that's kind of the risk, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, this person is a high level tennis player. I guess people could say, oh, you know, like, you know, what do you know? But yes, you're starting to ingrain a pattern that is not effective, that has no purpose. Nobody moves like that on a tennis court. So we got to be very, very careful with that. And then, I'm just looking here. Sorry. So I don't have the other one I wanted to share. I felt a little bad about sharing it because I didn't want anybody knowing who it was. I'm just being too nice, I guess, tonight. But you know, I saw this whole drill put out, and I'll just explain it. Where, first of all, when you don't have your athlete start in an athletic stance to split step, what are you doing? Like, that makes no sense to me when I see athletes starting like in a, you know, like a wide receiver on the line of scrimmage with 1 foot forward, 1 foot back, and starting like that. Guys, I mean, if you're on the court, you're trying to imitate court movements, that's strike number one. You know, and he'd have her jump over a pretty high hurdle, almost like a high hurdle, not like those little hurdles you were looking at, and then go to a ladder and hit the ladder and do these little choppy steps on court. You know, I've been on here and I've said this, and I've been on other podcasts and talked about this, on how I'm not a big fan of a ladder and ladder training. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not so much that I don't like the ladder. I had an epiphany about 8 months ago, and it's more how the coaches use it. Listen, you have young kids and they want to use the ladder. They love it. Knock yourself out. You know, the older adult that's lacking coordination, you know, and you just want to challenge them, fine, knock yourself out. Putting a 16-year-old competitive tennis player in a ladder for 5 to 10 minutes is ridiculous. First of all, you have, you know, don't say it's a speed and agility ladder, because it's not, because the ladder does not help you with speed. You want fast feet? Okay, I guess you could argue you're going to get faster feet, but if fast feet were the case, guess what? The cast of Riverdance would be representing Ireland in the Olympics, okay? They'd be the fastest people on the face of the planet. You know, you want to move quick feet, you want to get the nervous system firing, go wild, use it. But, you know, speed is based on ground force reaction. How hard can you punch your foot into that ground? Not tapping like you're Fred Astaire. And this is what drives me nuts. And then you see the kids that are using the ladders and they're on their tippy toes. Well, no, you know, like, it's just this little tippy toe, or having them run through. Listen, placing your foot in each square perfectly. Listen, you want to do a crossover, hit the side, come back, fantastic. But use it properly and not just something that looks cool with, you know, for Instagram purposes. And then the thing with the hurdles was also, you notice as she came over the hurdle, if I'm teaching that, hell yeah. If she has to move to her right, I'm going to have her split step to her right. So land, hit off the left leg and start that movement and get to a better advantageous point of movement and, you know, gain as much ground as you can. I take so much pride in an athlete that shows up and can only gain X amount of, you know, feet or meters to the right or left with one crossover, to the point where they're getting to the singles line like in under two crossovers. I think that's the important part, is how can you take what we're doing, what we have to be doing on court, and making it better within the training context? Because, you know, a lot of times, I might be all over the place. Feel free to rein me in here, because I just might rant till midnight.
No, you're doing great. But,
hey, you know what? I went to see Mark. I was at the same WTA event as Mark Kovacs. And Mark Kovacs stood up. He gave a presentation on movement and becoming, you know, more powerful, more explosive. You know how many foot drills were in there, or feet drills or whatever? Zero, nothing. It was about being in the weight room. It was about plyometrics and applying, learning how to be explosive. And, you know, so be smart and just don't put out hurdles for the sake of doing it. You know, when you're doing hurdles and you're trying to be explosive. Don't jump up and look like a, you know, a wet bag of towels. You know, when disgusting. I watch, it's just because they were washed. They weren't used or anything.
Okay.
when I watch the athletes and the coach going, oh, good, good. Yeah, that's nice. I'm like, they're going half speed. Now, listen, if you're trying to develop power, you can't go half speed. You have to give. That's one of the things about give 100%. Be explosive. Learn that explosiveness, you know? And then the cones, you know, one thing that gets me going with cones, when you see the athletes shuffling around them and everything, and they lift up a leg to go around the cone. You don't lift up a leg like that on a court. Or when you see a coach doing a drill feeding and the athlete has to run forward, hit the ball, and then shuffle all the way around the coach and back. We don't do that on a court. And you wouldn't do that. Why are you doing that in practice? So having drills that are specific to the sport, applying them properly, not just throwing a bunch of, you know, 15 different exercises onto the court. Again, I will give a pass for the junior athletes that need to be really challenged, But if you're, you know, a competitive player, you want to be able to move in a competitive way.
Got it. So basically, if somebody's telling you to do a movement that isn't something you'd be doing on the court at that particular time, then you just want to scrap it, basically.
You know, I want my athletes to learn that in no matter what scenario they find themselves on a court, they're able to get out of it. So that means if you end up to the outside, you know, the singles, doubles line, you've hit a ball, how can you reposition your body to get back to center? Not go through a ladder and then come back again. So yes, I would agree with that.
Now, just to play devil's advocate, which I'm sure you're going to, you know, tear up this counterpoint here. It's not really a counterpoint, but I'm trying to imagine like what the coaches are like, how they're trying to justify it. Is there any, you know, credence to the argument that, well, like, okay, that's not a movement that they're doing in a match or in practice, but it like develops some other part of their physical capabilities? Like, is that, does that have any justification?
Listen, of course you can put some justification again with the younger kids, but if you're 16 years old now and you really have to work on those patterns, we're behind, you know. It's not efficient. Let's just get them good at what they're supposed to do, but in every possible way. You know, one of the things that I started doing this year is, you know, every time you see a speed and agility drill or like a speed drill, you know, everybody, it's always go faster, go faster, go faster, correct? All right. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
So one thing that I'm trying to do this year is with our movement patterns is, okay, let's do this one fast, but come back and then slow it down, because that's more of a representative way of how we move on court. You know, the amount of times you see anybody sprinting for balls, it happens. But most of the movement patterns are nice controlled movement patterns, hitting the ball with great force. I mean, I forget who did it, but 70% of the balls are within 2 to 2.5 meters within the person of their bubble. I mean, get good at that bubble. I mean, then the other 30%, okay, work on that. But 70%, you'd want to be able to nail that every time, no?
Yeah, 100%, man, 100%. This is a great one about, you know, sticking to tennis-specific movements. Any other last thoughts / rants before we move on to the next one?
Yeah, and you know what? And I think coaches have to videotape their athletes doing the work, because I'm telling you right now, you may not see everything that you think you're seeing. You know, I had this discussion with a colleague going, you know, we all know the drills, you know, everybody knows that you should know most of the drills, or know at least enough good ones that you can help a player advance. So what makes it so different between someone that's being more successful with somebody than is it? And I really think it's the coach. I really think it's the cueing. I think it's the observation. It's how you relate to the athlete. It's taking video. I mean, let's face it. I mean, I believe in detail. I mean, it's all in the details. The more we can get that specific. I mean, listen, movement is about, A, can you get into position? Can you get into that position? If you can't, you better learn how. Sorry. Don't choke that. No, but you have to be able to get into position. Can you replicate those movement patterns? And if you can't, then you have to. Then you can start putting an element of power. And then the big thing is up here. We have to get the athletes activated. Sorry, little break here.
No problem. Yeah.
Because that's power. That's movement, that's power. The brain, can your brain stimulate your nervous system enough to make it as efficient as it wants to be, to recruit all those muscles that need to be used? I think that's really big. It is the building block. Can you get into position? If you can't, okay, you need to find someone that's going to help you with where your lack of mobility is lack of mobility and stability. Do you know how to do those movement patterns? I want to share this with you, please, okay?
Sure, yeah.
You don't have a choice. Nice. Damn. Nice. Yeah.
All right, we're sharing a video here.
Yeah, sharing a video here. So this is an 18-year-old player I was working with. And I want you to watch her left foot when she comes out of her split step here. Watch the lead foot. Watch what she does. See how she taps? Mm-hmm. And then she brings it underneath. That's not efficient. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
Tap and go. We don't want to see that. And same thing on the other side. So a lot of athletes do that where they tap because they're reaching. You'll notice her foot is not where it should be. It should have been brought underneath a little more. The left foot should have been driving off more. So she's headed in the direction she wants to go. But she had a really hard time with this because she'd been doing this for many, many years. So what did we do to correct this? This ain't rocket science. I just had her lean, lift her foot and drive off. Lean, lift her foot and drive off. And now I'm going to let it play through and it cleans it up quite nicely. Now she went pretty slow, but you have to be able to walk before you can run. And I think that was eye-opening to me. And I take video of all my athletes when we're training. I try to as much as possible take video of them. And then show it to them because that's huge. They're like, I'm doing that. You know, I'm corkscrewing my big toe into the ground to start my lateral movement, or I'm pulling like a Michael Jackson where you're almost like moonwalking that first step and then running. So that was.
Yeah. And great observations, great fixes. And videotaping yourself is so eye-opening, and it can be very budget-friendly as well. I mean, a lot of solutions. Even if you don't have somebody to hold the camera for you, I mean, you can get like a mount that like mounts over the tennis fence, and you can get like a GoPro. They sell pretty inexpensive ones. Yeah. So definitely encourage you to do that. So, Dean, you know, I'm not sure how many you prepared for today, how many you want to get into, but I assume you have another one for us.
Yeah, we have one more. And the last thing I'm going to say about that I think a lot of coaches, where there's a lot of mistakes, is where coaches take movement drills, if you want to call it speed and agility drills, and turn it into conditioning drills. I think that's a big, big mistake.
Yeah.
When you have a conditioning drill, when you have an agility drill that lasts for 20 seconds, just relax, okay? Give the athletes enough time to rest. I mean, if you're going to work on sprints and sprint mechanics, which I do, and I know some people are rolling their eyes, but I think it's important because it teaches great ground force reaction. But you got to give them at least a 1-5, 1-10 work to rest ratio. I mean, don't have them just keep going. So you really want them well rested and fresh. Yeah, the last thing. This I find probably more in tennis than other sports is people balancing on BOSUs, trying to throw a medicine ball or get some good power development for their swing and their shots. And you know, there was a great video of this female athlete, WTA player, standing on two BOSUs practicing her swings. And listen, it's not me saying this. It is me, but it's also the research shows that trying to create power on an unstable surface is counterproductive. Stop it. You want to feel the ground. We're not, unless tennis overnight changes to playing on top of a BOSU, stop it. You know,
it's a new sport.
Yeah, it's a new sport.
BOSU tennis.
BOSU tennis could be fun, right? Might give Padel a little run for its money. You know, I have video, but you don't really need to see the video to know that when you see a player standing on a BOSU with the dome up and on it, and their legs are you know, they're fighting for trembling, their life, staying on it. You're not working on balance. Stop it. Even the research shows that, you know, especially for elite athletes, it won't help with body balance. You want to try some balance exercises. Hey, how about this? Try that Bulgarian split squat we're talking about with 230s in your hand, barefoot. You know, like,
yes,
that's the way to do it. That's more efficient. You want to get a stronger swing, get on the ground, feel the ground, and generate that power from the ground up. Because as soon as you start coming down in that eccentric phase, in that first phase of the plyometric coming down to, you know, to build up the energy in the muscles and the tendons, you can see the legs are fighting to find it. And then the transition time to the concentric phase for when you come out of that is increased, and it can't. You want that to be snap and quick, and that's what tennis is. That swing pattern is you set up and bang, man, you just let it rip right after.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, all we need to do to challenge our balance really is to try doing a one-legged RDL. I mean, that's especially when you introduce like a, you know, some dumbbells at, even at lightweight, that's hard to do for 10 reps.
Oh, especially if you hold one, because now, you know, I'm doing a one leg RDL. I'm standing on my left leg. I have the dumbbell in my right hand. Well, all of a sudden now my body's being rotated inward. I still have to balance on my leg. That's really difficult. You know, you don't need to start balancing on all this stuff. Now the Bosu definitely has a place. People will say if you're trying to rehabilitate, let's say, from an ankle injury, that's a whole different story. Don't put a healthy body on there and start throwing the ball. It looks ridiculous. Yes, you may get a lot more likes on your Instagram, but the unfortunate thing...
That's the most important thing, Dean.
I understand that, and trust me.
Likes are life. Likes, you didn't know that?
Yes, likes are like dopamine, right? Really gives you a good rush.
Yeah.
But I wish people would understand that, you know, keeping it simple and being consistent and putting effort and mindfulness into your training is the recipe, you know, and it doesn't take all this balancing and stupidity that is growing on the internet. And it really bugs me that when I see some of these Instagram pages that have hundreds of thousands of followers find this stupid exercise, go, oh, great stuff by coach so-and-so. I'm just like, great. Now every kid tomorrow is going to be standing on two Bosus trying to balance. And guess what? Someone's going to fall off and hurt themselves also.
Yeah, it's interesting. The human race is just conditioned to really like just like entertaining things and, you know, the content that is, you know, quote unquote, like boring, but effective oftentimes gets overlooked and not liked as much. So it's just an unfortunate, you know, human trait that a lot of us have, I guess. We can't really see what's effective. Yeah. Interesting. So as far as like your best... balance exercises, we talked about the one-legged RDL, like any other even easier ones that we can do? I mean, just standing on one leg, like what do you think?
Assuming
we're not rehabilitating.
Well, even if you are rehabilitating, you should be standing on one leg, you know, barefoot. You know, doing a reverse lunge, coming down and then standing onto one leg barefoot is good. Doing a one-arm row, standing barefoot, I think is really good. One thing I forgot to mention, I'm glad you brought this up. My whole warm-up is done, the 10-minute dynamic part, not the movement part, is done barefoot. I mean, when you're doing a knee hug and you're trying to come up on your toes barefoot, that's challenging. Not only is it challenging for your balance, but guess what? Your ankle, your calf, you're going to get stronger. I mean, if your foot is the weakest part of your body, then think about, you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. So your weakest link is essentially the first thing touching the ground, not what I want.
So that reminded me of a commercial, you know, often you see the same commercials over and over again with certain channels. But there was one where I've seen the coach advises to try playing tennis without shoes on. So just have your socks on and... you know, I think he just like fed, like it's some like, fed and drop it, drills or whatever, but I forget what he said the benefit was, but do you see a benefit to, you know, hitting a little bit without shoes? Like, does that do anything for your body or balance or anything like that?
The first thing I would say is that if you do something like that, to be sure that there's nothing on the court that's going to like right through your foot. No,
broken glass.
Like,
yeah, it's true.
You know, I will say this, you know, I said at the beginning, and I hope I'm answering your question. And if I'm not, please just, you know, call me on
it. Sure.
we're doing our dynamic movement barefoot. We will start doing some movement patterns barefoot. Okay. You don't want to go never doing anything barefoot to moving on a court barefoot. You're asking for trouble. Your feet will not be ready for it. That's number one.
Right.
If there's something you think, like I've done it a couple of times with athletes that were not moving a specific way, I said, you know what? Let's take your shoes off and see if you cross over and show me a better stop, because you don't have the reliability of your shoe to save you. You really have to be a little more efficient with your foot pattern, your foot placement. But it's not really something I would recommend for someone to go out there and go, you know what, today I think I'm going to warm up barefoot. Yeah, this is how we're going today.
Okay, so very limited, you know, practice.
I mean, I wouldn't do it. I mean, I wouldn't do it. It's just not at all. You know, I don't mind warming up barefoot. I think that's good. But to start, I don't know. Listen, people have jogged marathons barefoot. I mean, you can build your strength up to a certain point, but you just got to be careful, especially like planting and trying to do a change of direction. That's where it gets a little nasty.
Yeah. So it seems like in the four biggest mistakes that you mentioned today, I mean, really the running theme is that you have to keep in mind, you know, how tennis works and, you know, be specific to what we're doing on the court. I think that's kind of what people where they get it wrong. And I mean, would you agree with that? Is that kind of the running theme?
Yeah, it's funny you said that, and I saw this Instagram post a week or two ago, and it was LeBron James, and he was just standing watching, and he wrote underneath his picture, he wrote, "I'm really not sure sometimes what they're training for." You know, like here's one of the greatest of all time watching other athletes train. And he's like, I'm not sure what they're training for. You know, I think there has to be a lot of different aspects in your training program to help you become a better athlete. Because I've always said many times, you know, I don't help become a better tennis player. I help you become a better athlete, which in turn will help you become a better tennis player. And yes, you have to challenge all these different things, but to a certain point, you want to keep it within the realm of tennis, especially as the athletes get older. I mean, you have to start, if you're working with an athlete that's slow, right? Let's say I get a 16-year-old athlete and he or she is slow. Well, I'm not going to start doing like ladder drills with them. That's not going to help. We have to make them more efficient. I want to make her stronger, more powerful. I want to teach her how to create more ground reaction force. I want to teach her better mechanics and change direction, starting, split step, push off. It's a lot already there.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of fantastic exercises to follow, I mean, Dean, what is your Instagram handle? Because you're posting a lot of great exercises. I mean, I've tried a bunch of them just by seeing your video. So what's your handle? And we'll post it on the show notes.
Thanks. Yeah, my handle is _baselinepower_.
Mm-hmm. So and where does like that come from, Baseline Power?
Baseline Power, where does it come from?
Yeah.
I made that up a while ago, but I also have a video series called Baseline Power, and my website's called baselinepower.com, so that all ties in nicely, but thank you.
Sweet.
I like the way you're trying to hold my hand on that one and just take it.
Trying to let the people know all the great stuff you're doing. So are there any other mistakes that have come to mind either before we started or during the podcast or just any other general thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, my last one is, you know, I had five literally, I guess. So the last one was recovery and the lack of recovery. So the recovery work, like the warm up, kind of the same thing, kind of the forgotten element of training. You know, if you want to be a complete player, it's not just about the time you put on the court. It's about, you know, you get a grade on 10. Okay, great court day, but I got a 3 on my warm up. I got a 4 on my on my prehab. I got a 2 on my recovery. It all plays together. You want to play the best type of tennis you can, then you have to put into it. And I think in the recovery, people just tend to grab their bag and walk out and that's it, you know, sit in a car and go home. And, you know, recovery has a lot of different aspects to it. It's not just the stretching or the mobility work or the foam rolling, but it's the hydration, it's the nutrition, and the sleep. I don't think we can, you know, talk enough about sleep. I think people are sleep deprived a lot of times. I know the kids get to be sleep deprived with the amount of work they put in on the court and for homework. So if, you know, it's really great if you buy a Theragun or your foam rolling and all this, but if you're sleeping 6 hours a night, I mean, it's that's the true recovery process.
Yeah. Just curious. I mean, do you or any of your students use like tools to track sleep or anything like that? Have you found that helpful?
No, we that's a good question. We really haven't done that. You know, there are so many other things I'm trying to implement also. And with the junior population, it can be quite difficult to get them to buy into it because sometimes they don't see the long-term effects for doing, you know, short-term things. Like I have them filling out after practice every day, just 5 questions, you know, how was my attitude? What was my posture or
How were you feeling? Or
no, but you know, like how were you walking on court? How was your body language?
Oh, I see.
You know, body language. Okay. Were you coachable? You know, just so that stays in their mind. So when they're feeling, I'm go, yeah, maybe today, you know, I wasn't intense. You know, I didn't listen to my coach when he told me or she told me what I should do and things like that. Really working on that aspect of a mindset of trying to show up for practice because it's hard. Listen. We can't be 100% every day, but if you have 80%, I want the 80% type of thing. And the kids, I think now with social media, I know some of them are like, yeah, I was up till 11 and 12. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like it's almost my bedtime now already at 9 o'clock. So, yeah.
Gosh, when you get that old, no, I'm kidding. You're not partying anymore, Dean, are you?
Yeah, no. It's only 8:30. No. It's early.
yeah. 30 more minutes till bedtime. Yeah. No, in terms of, you know, I know we need to get our sleep and that varies on, you know, your activity and your age and all that stuff. But in terms of the recovery routine, is it okay for us to delay that routine? Like, let's say, you know, we play a match or something and then like we drive 30 minutes home and then we conduct the recovery routine, the stretching and so forth. Is that okay? Or is that not optimal?
Well, there's a difference between optimal and okay. I would tell you that as long as you got it done, get it done. You know, that's the number one thing. You know, you want to be able to, I believe in stretching, you know, I think that's really beneficial. That's really it. And I had asked that same question to when I was traveling with a player a few years ago, and she had to do press. And like they tell you, you got to do press at 6:40. You got to be there for 6:40. Mm-hmm. If it's only 6:30, when are you going to do this recovery work? So, you know, the player went to press to do the interview. So I had this physiotherapist, and I asked her because, you know, it's a great question. I said, is that a bad thing? She goes, you know what? As long as they get it done, they get it done. I think that's the most important thing.
Got it. And so what are, like, just broadly for most people, like what types of things do you like to do for recover? I mean, stretching is very obvious, but are there any other things that you found that are really effective?
Well, for myself, and there is quite a bit of debate about, you know, whether foam rolling is worth it or not. For me, foam rolling has helped. You know, I've had some issues that, you know, I've rolled my quads, my knees have felt better. And I've actually seen it with the kids also, you know, especially going through some of the growth spurts. You know, rolling the muscle, it has helped. That's I'm sorry, that's really good. I do have a Theragun, you know, that I use occasionally too, which I love. So that helps also. I don't do the cold hot baths or anything like that. It's just you know, I'm not doing that. But you know, I will start after my workouts. I will start with, I'll have a shake, you know, right away to help me recover from my workout. I mean, I'm not competing anything, but if I go and I work out, whether it's cardiovascular work or if I'm in the gym, within minutes, I'm on that right away. And I'm stretching and having a shake at the same time.
What is the, that takes a lot of skill, by the way, stretching and having the shake. You need to be very balanced,
one,
I imagine.
It's one big straw. Don't worry.
Okay, good. Just curious, actually, with the shake. I mean, I don't know if this is like proprietary here, but what's the general composition of it? Maybe carbs, protein, or what you're putting in it? Or
so not. What I'm doing right now, ice. No, so I'll put ice cubes. I put in collagen also. Collagen in there. I put in a protein powder that is more oriented towards athletics, so it will have a lot of the amino acids. I will put in berries for antioxidants. I'll throw in maybe a banana in there too. And then I'll use the almond milk to really create like a more of a milkshake than a smoothie.
Yeah. Very good.
Very like good. That's funny.
You caught it, smart man.
Yeah. And I put one more thing in it now, and I, for the life of me, I can't remember what it is. I can see it's small.
Is that because it's illegal? Is that
no,
why?
No. Just these small little black
zeroids.
Little black beads. What are they called? Little black beads.
Beads.
Anyways, I'm sorry. I truly just.
Caviar?
Yeah, but it's like caviar, but it's hot, but it's really, it's good in omega-3s and really healthy. So I put that in there too.
Oh, is it chia seeds?
Yes,
or
thank you very much.
Yeah,
you're the man. Yes.
Love it. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for the clapping. Yeah, I actually put that in my breakfast usually if I have oatmeal or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Cereal, yeah.
But the collagen is something new with polypeptide. I mean, and I don't know if it's psychosomatic or what, but my joints are feeling a little better. And so if it works,
nice.
Just, as long as it works.
Yeah. Totally random question. I don't know how many people this will help, but the collagen, does that have shellfish in it? Do you know?
That's a good question. I'm not. I
that's okay.
Not,
don't worry.
Okay. No, but from what I read on the label, it's, I don't think, why, are you allergic to shellfish?
Yes, I am. And peanuts.
I don't think it, I think it's okay for everybody. Yeah. I think. Don't go try it and then blame me, please.
Yeah, that would be very shellfish of you. Sorry, another one. Please don't leave.
Minutes.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I'm pretty bad with that stuff. The puns, I love them.
Yes.
Yes. Good stuff. I'm sorry,
punishment.
Everybody. We got. Oh my Lord! We're having you back next week.
Okay.
Awesome, Dean. So this has been fantastic. So I think we've hit our five. Any last thoughts on the last one, or just anything in general to help our audience?
You know, on the last one, go in, like stretch out some areas, you know, like stretch out your shoulders, stretch out your hips, your calves, your rotation. Help your body help you. I mean, the more you help your body, the better tennis you're going to play. And you know, the tennis, especially the higher level you are, it's your vehicle. It's your instrument. Your body's taking you where you want to go. Treat it right. And if it takes a little extra time, spend that time, because that's what success is about. It's about sacrifice. And because you're sacrificing an extra 10, 15 minutes in the gym, so be it. I mean, that's, you know, the ones that want, get it done and do what it's supposed to do. And those that turn their back on it, it ends up biting them in the butt anyways. And lastly, keep it simple, stupid. I mean, the KISS principle, just train. Go in there, train well, train hard. Doesn't have to be fancy. You don't need all this big equipment, you know, dumbbells and a pulley system and, you know, elastic bands even if you want to. You can get a lot of stuff done. Doesn't have to be, you know, that complicated.
Yeah, I love that. One last pun for you. I train so hard that when I travel, I only use the train. Okay, that was bad. That was real bad.
You should have just left it. Everybody was hopefully somewhat laughing. Now people just clicked off at that.
Yeah, they're just angry. They're angry. They're going to leave 0-star reviews.
Yes.
So he, that's not possible though, actually. Thank God. So one thing with the with stretching, I was curious. Do you have any students that, and I don't even know if this is a thing, honestly, like people who are like they would be hurt by stretching too much? Is that a thing with people who are too?
You do get some people that are hypermobile, and there really is no need to stretch. You know, you want to strengthen. I've had kids with, you know, hypermobility problems in the wrists or the elbows or the shoulder, and yeah, you got to be careful with that. That, you know, you want to discuss things with a physiotherapist, someone that probably has a better handle on that stuff than I would. But I would stay away from stretching it and just being sure that it's strong and able to, you know, resist any of the demands put on the joint by the sport.
Gotcha. Thanks, Dean. So, any last thoughts? I keep asking these broad questions, but like any last pieces of advice to help our audience improve their tennis fitness?
You know what? I think it's like anything else, Mariben. Get into a habit of doing it. Do small amounts. Start 10 minutes.
Start small.
Whatever it is. Just start small. Don't go big. You're just asking.
Build a habit.
Yeah. And build a habit. And then you're like, huh. Oh yeah, I got to do that before I get on court. Like it just becomes part of you. And if you're late, you know what? Okay. So you lose 10 minutes of practice time. It's fine. You're doing yourself a favor. You're going to be better prepared for your lesson. You're going to be warmed up. Your nervous system's going to be firing. Your muscle tissue will be ready for the sport. So take the time, do it, stick to it. And I promise, I really do, it will definitely pay off.
Yeah, it's going to pay off in spades. So I love that. Dean, so I know we mentioned a few places for people to check out, but any other, you know, social media handles or you know, thing that you want to mention?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram a lot, again, at _baseline_power_. That's my main focus. I really enjoy posting there. I get really, you know, I've got to know people through Instagram, so I really enjoy that. I like helping people. I want to help people do the right thing and learn how to do it and not waste their time doing stupidity like standing on a BOSU. Sorry. And, you know, I do also, I give a class every Tuesday, Thursday at noon online at 12 o'clock Eastern time. You know, it's a small fee to join in. First one's free. All you have to do is just, you know, send me a message on Instagram or go to my website called Baseline Power and you can send me an email from there. It'd be great to have people join that class. The class has been going on ever since COVID started. I mean, that's, you know, we have a great little group of people that get together, enjoy it. We're, you know, it's not big. It's anywhere from 5 to 8 people every Tuesday, Thursday. And we work on tennis specific things. We work out, we work on foot movement. We do some foot patterns. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun for sure. And, you know, Dean and I have been doing some live workouts, like I mentioned in the past, and he's fantastic. And, but you know, it's really cool to hear that for a long while, you know, some people from the summit had joined that class that you did, and, they've been there for a while. I don't know if they're still there, but that's fantastic. So,
yeah. One of them just said to me too, and I mean, I'm patting myself on the shoulder here, but she said, you know, I've never been so fast on the court, you know. She's a 5-0 player. I've never been so fast on the court, or 4-5, 5-0 player, something like that. And she says, I've never been so fast on the court. It's helped me tremendously understanding what the movement patterns are.
Yeah, that's what happens when you find a great coach. And speaking of, you know, one other question too, like for, you know, if people don't live in Montreal and, you know, maybe they just want, in addition to coming to your class, you know, maybe they also want to find a coach, like who they can see and all that. Do you have any advice on how to find a really good coach that can elevate your tennis fitness?
Well, first of all, I would say that you can always contact me and we can do a Zoom training session, which has become very popular. And, you know, COVID's been a terrible, terrible thing. One of, you know, if you want to call it a positive thing, is that I've worked now with people literally all over the world. You know, people from all over the States, Canada, London, Turkey, India, Australia. I mean, it's just really branched out. Singapore. So I'm very fortunate with that. How do you find, that's a great question. I get that a lot where, you know, I had this one father talking with last week from San Diego going, yeah, we went to a couple of these speed places, but they're not really thinking tennis. They're really teaching more like baseball, football type of stuff, you know? It's not easy. It's not easy to find somebody, but you know, you can go through the ITPA. I think, you know, if you're ITPA certified, you have a good base knowledge. I would definitely would want someone to be also a certified strength and conditioning specialist because, you know, if you're good, you should be able to train almost anybody in almost any sport. It's just you have to understand the sport, what the requirements are, and what to train to make that person better.
Love it, Dean. Awesome. Well, I think we have reached the end of the road just for today, my friend.
Yes.
But I do want to thank you very much for coming on to the podcast. It's always fun, and we have great conversations, if I do say so myself. So I do want everybody to definitely check out baselinepower.com and Dean's Instagram at _baselinepower_, and definitely check out his class as well that he does. Yeah. And you said it was Tuesday, 12 p.m. Eastern?
Tuesday, Thursdays,
12 p.m.
Tuesday, Thursdays, 12 o'clock Eastern time.
Perfecto.
Noon lunch, yeah.
Awesome. Sweet, sweet. Awesome, Dean. Any last words before we,
last words. People are going, first of all, thank you for having me on. It was a complete pleasure. I love the way this goes because it's, you know, we're two friends. People should know we know each other. And it's just two friends talking shop about something that we're both passionate about. I'm extremely flattered every time that you have me on, and I'm humbled by that. So thank you for that. And I don't think it can be understated how much work you do for tennis and you know, the community, whether it's for players, parents, or coaches, the amount of work that you've done and everything that is there for people to grab. I mean, do it. I mean, you have great guests, you do a great job, and it's fun. It's just fun. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, my friend. And just thanks to wonderful, kind experts like yourself that I'm able to, you know, create this the show and other content. So thanks again, Dean. We will be in touch very soon. Really enjoyed it today. And everybody definitely check out Dean at baselinepower.com and check out that class. I think you're going to really enjoy it and do some privates with Dean. He's top notch and has trained professional players, amateur players, juniors. So he really knows his stuff. He's got a billion certifications, I think. So check him out. And thank you again, Dean. And we'll chat soon.
Thank you, buddy. Thanks. Great job.
You too. All right. I really hope that you enjoyed part two of my interview with Coach Dean Hollingworth and that you learned a lot about movement training and the mistakes that we make when we train for our agility and when we train our footwork and the proper way to train our power generation from the ground up and then how to properly recover. And if you enjoyed this episode, I really would appreciate it very much if you would leave a review for the Tennis Files podcast. And you can do that on Apple Podcasts by going to tennisfiles.com/Apple Podcasts or on your favorite podcast app of choice. And I think we're very close to 100 reviews or ratings maybe. So I would really appreciate it if you would leave a review for the show. And I would like to leave you with a quote, as I often do at the end of the show, and this one is by Rumi. And Rumi said, "It's your road and yours alone. Others may walk it with you, but no one can walk it for you." Really love this quote because it really introduces accountability and that ultimately you're the one that is seizing the day, hopefully, and forging your own path. No one else can do that for you. They can guide you and give you advice and all that, but ultimately it's you. As I mentioned, and I don't get any kickback from this or anything, but Dean hosts two tennis-specific fitness classes per week online that you can join. They are on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 12 p.m. Eastern time. So just shoot Dean a DM at _baseline_power_ on Instagram, or just contact him at baselinepower.com. And with that, I really do want to thank you for listening to the podcast. We've got some great interviews coming up that have already been recorded and will be published every Wednesday, as you know. So really appreciate your support and kind messages and encouraging words to me. So thanks a lot. Have a great week. Keep improving your game just a little bit every day, and you'll see the huge compounding effect in due time. And have a great one. I'll see you next week. This is Mirabon signing out.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.